you know, as we turn to the global outlook, there are two major themes. They're both sort of need to be looked at separately, but there's a lot of interconnection between them as well. And that is what we're calling modern mercantilism, and then, of course, AI. And so maybe take a moment here to just talk about how you're assessing all of these two big forces.
Yeah, so we want to dig deep into the chapter that we're now in modern mercantilism and in technological disruption and AI. The world is changing in both cases. Modern mercantilism and AI, like you said, first off, they're interlinked. There's a lot that link between AI and modern mercantilism. And both at the same time are driving accelerating resource grabs. What I mean by that, in this new modern mercantilist world, the US is looking at choke points around the world of places where it can garner resources that China might need. China, on the flip side, has built out choke points themselves, knowing things that we need. And so both, in an attempt to sort of strengthen their relative position, are doing those things. And those things have negative effects relative to, let's say, cooperation and collaboration on productivity globally and so on. So big deal, driving markets, driving inflation and so on. And AI, of course, going through the biggest CapEx build out since World War II. What it leads you to is this very tricky world. You have a modal outcome. If you think about our systematic process, right? This is not the first CapEx boom that's happened. The implications of CapEx booms are higher profits because it's one company's profits while it's not yet another company's expense. It generally leads to higher growth to some extent, particularly in the short term, to higher inflation. That need for capital to do the CapEx generally drives up interest rates. The places that are doing the leading that CapEx, generally you see their currencies rise and so on. So there's a linkages that you can count on that I would describe as kind of the modal outcome, still probably the most likely outcome. But even the most likely outcome may not be like more than 50% likely, like it, because there are so many major things to navigate along the way, right? Along the way, we've got chaotic modern mercantilism. It's been a choice by President Trump, the Trump administration, to not just approach the world through a mercantilist eyes, China's been doing that, but to do it in a way that's unpredictable. And that creates it creates some benefits potentially in negotiations, but it creates risks in terms of other side of those things, potentially misjudging and so on. So risks of escalation, big changes happening at fast rates in a complicated global system. That's one thing that has to be navigated. The second is that we're testing limits of fiscal policy and weakening institutions through that. Safety risks and just general AI disruption. While there's the positive of a normal technological change, the rate at which the disruption of this change is happening is unprecedented and needs to be thought about and navigated. So how do you deal with it, right? You've got to build a portfolio where you can make money in the modal outcome that you expect, but be prepared to navigate those major risks and major changes along the way.
Despite all of these risks, it's not like it's not commented upon, equities continue to trade at very high multiples, and interest rates, even though they moved back a little bit in the United States, pretty stable range. So how are you assessing the impact of modern mercantilism, for example, on portfolios today?
Yeah, great. Well, let's step back. We've been talking about modern mercantilism for a while now. So in November 2024, I wrote A Daily Observations, as you'll remember, we're all mercantilists now. And in it, I laid out what we mean by mercantilism and some of the implications that we expected. So I kind of want to catch you up to date on how that's going and also how we see the most recent chapter. So first off, when I wrote We're All Mercantilists Now, right, I said that, look, this was the U.S. was reacting to years of Chinese mercantilism that had hollowed up out the middle class, changed the sort of the increased populism within the United States. And you get to this modern mercantilism stage where the government's playing a large role in determining how the markets can work, with a focus on how it at least views, the Trump administration views, increasing national wealth and strength. Trade deficits are seen as transfers of wealth rather than seen as part of a cooperative trade system. There's a prioritization of self-sufficiency and a transactional approach. Those things that we laid out then have been just playing out one after the other. If you go into 2025, you know, the full embrace of modern mercantilism seen in Liberation Day, highest tariffs since World War II. You got those. You've also got pressure on the allies, the transactional approach, making sure that you're getting paid. If you're going to defend somebody in Ukraine, et cetera, make sure you're getting paid and so on and so forth. And that's all playing out. That led to growing distrust of the United States by traditional allies, shifts in those alliances. And that's all happening in a world where so much money is in the United States. And those questions start to rise of, if you're a Canadian, if you're a European, how wise is it to have the vast majority of your portfolio in U.S. assets? And then, of course, we enter this year and you get more talk of Greenland. You get Venezuela, the U.S. seeing in the Americas a source of massive commodity usage by China. The U.S. changes that very quickly. And potentially, due to the success of that, was emboldened to take big steps in Iran that obviously have been much more complicated in terms of doing that. But now with the Strait of Hormuz, you've got increased weaponization of choke points, lowering global productivity, obviously causing all kinds of strain.
And another question that we get a lot, and you actually wrote a recent Daily Observations about, is the mismatch in supply and demand for compute. And so I think it would be valuable to hear you just talk about the implications of that imbalance.
Okay, let me start with the latest developments in AI. And there's so much going on, right? So we talked about the resource grab, that AI is grabbing resources and building out data centers. There's not enough semiconductors, et cetera, in the world. The science bet that we were talking about last year is paying off. I'll talk more about that later. And on top of that, you're getting this disruptive moment. Claude Code has brought us to what I call the Barnes & Noble moment. We'll dig into that. The only thing, and this is a little bit to the question you're just asking, the only thing growing faster than compute supply right now in the world is compute demand. And that's creating shortages and rationing. And those are the big headlines. Might be good here to dig deeper into each. I want to start with the science bet and talk about the science bet. What's happened here is you now have two bets. You have the science bet that we talked about before was being driven by the fact that many people involved in AI believed that if they built out the technology, that you would be able to get technological breakthroughs that would make the people that built the technology extremely powerful in the world. That was the bet. That was leading to more and more CapEx. Scientific breakthroughs were happening such that the technological breakthroughs were increasing conviction, which was increasing R&D training and CapEx and so on. You were running around that circle. What's happened really significantly since about December is that you had a profitable breakthrough. So not only are in the coding apps, in Claude Code and to some extent Codex, what you see is a big breakthrough that is making the AI labs able to create revenue by the adoption. So not only do you have this loop that continues, that the scientific breakthroughs are happening and there's more conviction that you could get to general intelligence if you continue on this path, there's also massive adoption. So that's what I mean by the science bets paying off. You now have a profitable revenue angle in the coding. The second thing I talked about was the Barnes & Noble moment. So let me talk about that for a second. In terms of the Barnes & Noble moment, what I mean by that is you're now, the science bet is paying off, you now have adoption, and that's creating disruption. And the Barnes & Noble moment in 1998, 99 was the recognition by books and mortar, like bricks and mortar companies, that they had to get online. Everybody had to take the investment, spend the money, get online, because Amazon's online, now I've got to get online. And during that phase, you went in this period in markets where the markets priced in the internet eating the world. You have this huge surge in this period in dot-com stocks, the NASDAQ, and this decline in the rest of the world, in the Dow. But that was a dangerous period in markets in terms of navigating that. Of course, in that case, it turned out it was a bubble, and although if you played it out for the full decade, that turned out to be true. But you had the massive bubble period. Now, if you look at today's version of that, right, you've got this concept being priced in now where AI is eating the world, and it's starting with software. So you've got AI capability to change the way software is built. Companies need to change the way they build software, what their software engineers look like, et cetera. So you've seen this huge surge in AI supply chain stocks and this decline in the most vulnerable sectors to AI. And this has set up a really important moment to think hard about, because I believe it's just the first of many disruptions to come as this technology rolls out and has bigger and bigger impact. That you could see that in terms of the software stock returns declining. And you hear all the time, like, wow, what a massive move in software, what a mistake. And I just want people to think in terms of disruption and the risk premium you should price in for disruption. Is that a huge move in software stocks? It could feel like a huge move in software stocks. But all it's been is this shift. If you look at an essentially, say, prior at the peak in software stocks, markets were essentially pricing in consistent free cash flow for the next decade without any disruption. So basically, 100% of the major software stocks were priced to exist 10 years from now. Today, if you look at what's happened to the pricing, it's saying, okay, there's a disruption element. Now, something like 82% of companies are expected to make it through the transition the next decade. That's not crazy. Like, that is the nature of the disruption. And I think that's the risk premium that you're going to see enter equity markets in different industries as you go through the competition of a major technology changing the way those industries operate. And then I'll just add to that, the thing we talked about is, because there's so much demand for usage now of AI outside of the labs, but actually inference demand, what you're seeing is demand way outpaced supply. So we've been measuring using a tremendous amount of things to understand all the supply in the world. And it's monumental. I mean, we still don't think the supply that's out there is being priced in fully. And demand is rising even faster than that supply growth. So this is our chart of the total demand, total supply. You're basically missing by the end of the year. We think the gap between supply and demand is going to be so large that it's like missing all of the AI build out over the last year. That's the shortage that we'll face next year. And you already see it. There isn't enough AI. There isn't enough compute in the world that you're seeing rationing start to take place. And that's happening through raising prices. It's happening through throttling model access. It's happening to some degree by within the labs, them having to turn off some of their research because there's just not enough compute out there. And we're just at the early phase of that. As demand is ramping faster than supply, that gap is going to get bigger. And there are big implications of that. So let me wrap this AI section with the implications of AI capabilities being rationed, because they're important. And by generating AI faster, we're exacerbating winner-take-all dynamics. And the odds that you end up in a winner-take-all situation because the best models aren't fully distributed is increasing. Big deal. That's creating frontier AI capabilities are growing a structural advantage for those that have access to them. It's super important to create those partnerships, to have access to those things. And therefore, the potential for an accelerated, broader disruption loop where the companies with access to the best AI tools that can afford the compute, can get the compute, outcompete those that can't. So that's important implications for the next phase of the AI disruption.